This is Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast.
The show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast. The roles have kind of been reversed this week. I am still hanging out at home, but I'm the one who gets to call in for the podcast episode this week. If we had pressed record about 35 minutes ago, you would have heard us struggling through trying to figure out this setup that we haven't used in so long to try to be able to record an episode. So, Robin, thank you for dealing with the frustration and the headaches to be able to make this episode happen this week.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird and strange with me having all the equipment in front of me instead of you having your equipment in front of you. It was bad enough for Keith and Derek and I to try to get it all figured out in the truck, much less throwing a phone call in the mix for me. But I think we got it worked out, and we sound okay to each other. So hopefully this turns out all right.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys did a great job with those podcasts in the truck and everything. I was talking to a couple other podcasters and sharing some of the audio and how we were able to make it. So great job with that. You mentioned that you have been hanging on to the podcast equipment for a while, planning on trying to get out in turkey on it. Being today is actually June 1st for tomorrow's episode. Are you all wrapped up? What's your turkey season looking like?
Turkey season is officially in the rear view mirror for me. I really had hope to get motivated to go to Nebraska this past weekend for a long weekend. That would have been their last weekend of the season. And to be perfectly honest, I just still felt burnt out. Not burnt out from hunting. I had the itch to be out hunting, but burnt out from traveling. And a lot of that came from the factor of, you know, here we are, it's June, and we're still talking about COVID-19 and the effects of that. And for me, it was really about not wanting to spend the money, frankly, on a hotel in Nebraska. I'm kind of spoiled. I have friends in Nebraska. I'm used to being able to stay with them and get to visit with them, you know, at nighttime, and just knowing that if I went up there, it was going to be 2-3 days or nights in a hotel. It just didn't feel like I wanted to get into that again. So instead, I stayed home and got some hog feeders set up and really on to the next bow hunting, quote unquote, season for me.
Yeah, everything is getting prepared. You mentioned, I love road trips. I love to drive anywhere once to be able to see the country, but there are a lot of places that after one time, it's like I'm done doing that. So just the drive to get out there, what is it? Is it 6-8 hours for you to cruise through northern Missouri and up into Nebraska?
Where I go in Nebraska, it's about 9.5 hours, and that's if I'm making good time and not stopping very often. So it's not a short drive, and I've already made it once, and I did the Texas drive twice. So I don't know. I just gave in to the burnt out feeling and just said, heck with it. And like you and I talked about last time that we talked, which has been about 2 weeks ago. I mean, I have no complaints about how the turkey season went. I had a good season. I didn't kill as many birds as I had set out to, but that doesn't mean that I didn't have a good season, and I squandered a couple opportunities as well. So all in all, with the birds I killed and the birds, you know, that I was around getting killed, you know, hunting with Keith and Derek, I mean, no complaints from me.
Yeah, still an exciting season. Like I said, it's hard to get motivated for a 9-9.5 hour drive to then not only sit in a blind all day and what we've already discussed is those super comfortable chairs, but then when you're done, you go back and you sit in this tiny little hotel room. I've shot so many archery tournaments where by the time I'm done, I'm like, I don't want to just sit in this tiny ass room in the cheapest hotel that I could find and whoever knows where USA for this archery tournament. So I can't blame you at all for not wanting to head out and try to get one more bird, and I think it speaks volumes too about it. It's not just about killing shit for us. There's a lot more that goes into it. You could have used it, and I'm sure wouldn't have gone to waste, but sometimes it's just not worth it for the overall experience. And there's other shit going on. You mentioned we haven't talked for a couple of weeks. We might as well go ahead and point that out too. Settled in, kind of took last week off, one for Memorial Day, and two, kind of over summer, we might be getting to a point where some of these episodes are coming out more bi-weekly. I had a few people reach out last week and said, you guys have a new episode? I haven't seen it yet. It's like, no, we paused this week. We're taking a break, enjoying the holiday. But just with everything that we've had going on and we've been keeping up to speed with on turkey season, it kind of hit that point where it's like, it might be worth it to have a breather. We may not have as much going on over the weeks. And I'm sure I've got plenty to talk about now with 2 weeks of different outdoor stuff that I've been doing. Maybe rolling to, I would tell people probably expect more over the summer that these episodes might become more bi-weekly and focused on what we've been doing than trying to hit something every single week. Plus, y'all are out there enjoying your summers. You're out doing your things as well. We might still bring them to you weekly if we've got something great to share, but may also take a look at this summer for ourselves to make sure that we've got time focusing on the stuff we need to focus on, that we switch more to maybe one episode every couple weeks for y'all.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. Every 2 weeks, you know, until deer season really smacks us in the face is probably a good pace, and that doesn't mean that we might have a guest, you know, that we don't want to wait 2 weeks to get published. And if that's the case, then there might be some time periods where we have a few episodes that pop up every week, but everybody can count on us to be published in every 2 weeks at least. And that's probably all that they really want to hear, our voices anyways, I think.
Right. Yeah. The good news is deer season slapping us in the face is probably only about 8 weeks away. Anyway, I'm already in full-on whitetail mode over the last couple weeks. Been focusing on food plots and starting, I think, here this coming weekend, maybe looking at doing some tree stand work and moving some things around. So it'll go really quick this summer, I think. But yeah, with our voices, I'm sure every 2 weeks is more than enough for most of our listeners to get their fix and deal with us.
Right, right on. You're right, though. It really has started to hit me like, you know, I've got this to-do list in my head about what needs to be done to get ready for deer season. And, you know, I spent quite a bit of time going through my trail cameras that aren't out right now. In other words, I got a big drawer full of trail cameras that, you know, need fresh batteries, fresh cards, need to be checked, make sure they're working. And a few of the cameras that we do have out, we're starting to get velvet pictures on. And so, of course, that gets the blood pumping. You know, what are those, some of those bucks that are just starting to fork out a little bit, what are they going to turn into? And I know Eric put in another water tank at one of our suburban spots. He did that while I was turkey hunting. And even with all the rain that we've had, this you'll find quite interesting. I haven't even talked to you about it yet. All the rain that we've had in that water tank that he put in has only been in for a week, and deer are drinking out of it, even though it has been raining almost every day. I found that really interesting.
Nice. I guess, I mean, just get, if it's convenient to their bedding area and they don't have to get into a creek or a bigger pond or something, if it's right there, start using it as soon as there's water. And that's good, though, that they're already starting to work. I mean, that's just conditioning them. And I know some people, oh, that's cheating or whatever, but we're trying to set ourselves up for the best odds of success. And you've talked a lot about your suburban properties and how large they are and what you need to have, you know, consistent success out there. So it's awesome to hear that they're already using that new water hole. And I'm sure that makes Eric feel good for all the work that he put in. Luckily, we haven't had too many scorching hot days yet to make it really terrible to get out in the woods and work. But I think we're well on our way. The humidity has definitely been cranking up. And I know these next couple weekends, it's one of those things like, let's try to find the work that I can do that's not back in the deepest, thickest parts of the woods. I think I'm hopefully pretty much done. I went out a couple weekends ago or Memorial Day weekend and got trail cameras put out in the really thick parts. I got a couple of the Spy Point Link S's put out. So I've got solar power. I've got 32 gig cards in them. I've got one that's over a mineral site that we've had set up. The deer have really been hitting hard. getting a lot of pictures of does, started to get some fawns dropping on cameras, but I wanted to get out and get those places that were back in the woods where I just wanted to be able to let them sit out there and soak and not have to go in and disturb, and really getting some cool pictures. No monsters yet, not a lot of velvet growth, but we're seeing some, and plenty of deer. So lots of good sign that we've had out, and just trying to keep tabs on things. Again, I don't want deer season to sneak up on me this year and all of a sudden feel like I'm underprepared. So I'm trying to make sure they got food right now, make sure they've got minerals, if they've got water somewhere close by. And I'm sure, I mean, I've seen the pictures. I think you shared pictures, or maybe Eric shared pictures on Facebook. When you talk about those water tanks, I mean, you're not talking like one of those 12-foot galvanized cattle tank, almost like a Hoosier swimming pool type deal like I had as a kid. How big is the little pool or the tank that he put in?
I think the one that he just put in was 42 gallons. It's somewhere on the neighborhood of, it's a rectangle, but it's somewhere like 3 feet long and 30 inches wide and maybe 24 inches deep, somewhere in that neighborhood. And he went ahead and buried it. The one that we initially put out in one of our other areas a couple years ago as an experiment, we didn't bury, and the deer did use it, but this one was a little more convenient for him to dig a hole and put it in. So he did that. And, you know, really we're putting that water there for two main purposes. And one is a very early season. If it stays really hot and dry, then, you know, theoretically we might be able to shoot a nice buck that comes to get a drink, because there's really not water around on that property except for a wet weather creek that is, you know, just runs water as runoff. But the main reason that we are putting these water tanks in is for deer, bucks especially, to get a drink when they're cruising during the rut. You know, every deer that uses those properties, they're going to know where that water tank is, you know, if it's there long enough. And that's why we've got it in this early. So you never know. We might be talking in November about a nice buck that came cruising through and came to get a drink of water and got just a little too close to one of us.
That's the whole point of all the work. I know we hit that last week of turkey season. My dad got out and sprayed a bunch of pastures that we've tried to keep mowed over the last 13 years so that we've had the property. Finally got around to getting everything set up. We got the tractor and everything running right and set up. We've had a food plot, plot master for, I couldn't even tell you how long. Finally, we got everything working there. There were some wires, some stuff that rusted up just from the amount of time that it sat, but finally got out and got sprayed. We did some disking over Memorial Day weekend. I think we've got one more spray and going to hit it one more time with the disc. But with this plot master thing, I mean, it's everything. It's got discs, it's got tined rakes on it, it's got a seeder and a cultipacker and everything. So I'm excited. We're gonna get out and start getting some fall plots, some wildlife cover, and some quail and dove, more for the birds and the turkeys, and something for the deer. I don't think we're gonna try to mess with corn or anything. We've talked about that before. I was kind of stupid to do that when there's thousands of acres, but we are ready to get in and get some plots. And as I was disking the pasture that Jack and I have hunted over the last couple years, the deer will come out and they'll kind of feed on some of the clover that comes up in it, or just kind of cross the pasture. It's maybe 100 yards long and 50 yards wide, so they'll cruise through there. But even as I was disking it, it's just one of those things, like, I can picture the deer coming out in the fall and being able to feed right to the stand and being able to bring them and position them where we want them to be spending their time. I said, for whether they're cruising during the rut, give them something else that's right by the bedding areas that they can nibble on, or to keep the does close, really more than anything, making sure that they've got some food. And I think we're even going to put up some Egyptian wheat for some screen cover, and might be a dick thing to do, but kind of block the neighbors from being able to peek over into the food plots across the creek. And anything we can do to keep the deer on our property, make them not have to cross over to the neighbors. I don't know what their hunting situation is over there. I've seen a person walking around a couple different times over the last few years, but just right now focusing on anything we can do to try to get these deer to be well fed and well taken care of now, get all the nutrients that they can, but not just the deer either. We've got quail around the property. We've got, I've seen, saw a hen up over Memorial Day weekend, which was a good sign. I'm still getting pictures of some turkeys. I haven't seen any poults on camera yet or seen them with my own eyes, but the more that we can get out there, not only is it going to help the deer, the turkey, all the wildlife, but it feels so good to be able to do some of that work and know that it's your blood, sweat, and tears that are helping to improve this. And you're not just showing up somewhere and be like, oh, this looks great. I'll hunt right here. So it's been really, I've enjoyed kind of this break between hopefully at some point in time, getting the call to go film some hogs when it's not 105 degrees at 2 o'clock in the morning. But it's been a nice break to still stay active and know that I am preparing myself already for this fall, not waiting until August or September to start thinking about deer hunting with season only a couple weeks away, but really putting that effort in now to maybe not make October and November easier, but to sure make them much more enjoyable, to know that we've set this up to be the best spot that we can make it at the moment to try to improve the hunting.
Yeah, so many people, of course, today's world of social media and keyboard warriors, it's easy for a lot of people to just, you know, say things that they don't really seem to be thinking about. But it seems to be a notion out there that planting food plots or putting out a water bucket like we're doing in spots is cheating or making it easier, and what happened to woodsmanship. But isn't it really more about just providing a habitat of variety for the animals that use the land we're hunting, and some satisfaction that goes along with making the whole deer herd's life just a little bit easier, and so much less about making it easier for ourselves? I mean, I went and mowed a clover plot that I have on one of my plot places here close to where I live. And I've never even killed a deer there, never. And I've lived here for, most of my life. But yet, here's that food plot that's still there every single year. And so I get where you're coming from. And it's just, like you said, a feeling of satisfaction at doing something good for the resources.
Yeah, I've been excited. I already told you, we haven't got a whole lot of pictures of velvet. I mean, I'm some, but nothing that's like, oh, wow, that could be a big deer. I've got some big body deer that have shown some velvet, but no super growth. But the other weekend, as soon as I had that picture sent to me of the fawn jumping across in front of the camera, and couldn't have been more than a couple days old, maybe 3 or 4 days at the most, I immediately was like, all right, I need to get out tomorrow. I went out and I got the minerals put back out and really worked in and dropped some feed, and I've got a few pictures of the mama doe, and you can tell she's got a big fat milk sack swinging around below her belly. And it's that is what actually excites me. It's like, okay, come on, mama, you're good. You get that good mineral, get those nutrients, take care of yourself, take care of the little ones. Like, to me, I love the idea of trying to grow healthy deer where they're not just barely getting by, but I'm also not out dumping hundreds of pounds of corn and just saying, here, eat this stuff that's on the ground. It's just so awesome to be able to see those deer and even the fawn. That was, not only was it cool to see a fawn, I think they're awesome looking, but to be able to see within a matter of days that we have a fawn now, I'm starting to get these pictures. One of the reasons I love to keep my cameras out as long as I possibly can, I backed it up and it looks like sometime in that first week of November was when that particular doe had been bred. So I'm even using that information as I'm trying to keep the deer on the property and learn more about them to help me set up and say, all right, when am I most likely to take my vacation this year? Should I go in that first week of November? Is it the second week? I mean, that's kind of always been my battle. So that's been another thing. By being able to keep them on our property, I'm starting to see more and understand more with gestation periods to realize, okay, yeah, that's only one doe. And I'd love to start seeing some more fawns to get a better idea of it. But I can really dial in and say, okay, if they were breeding in the first week of November around here last year, they're probably going to be breeding around that same time. So my pre-rut's probably going to be that last week of, or the last few days of the last week of October, rolling into that first week of November. And just every aspect of that gives me a stronger and stronger idea of when to spend my time, because I don't have unlimited amounts of time to be able to get out in the woods and just sit every day. I would if I could. I say that. It's kind of like the turkey hunting thing. After a while, it's like, I'm feeling the burn. I need to just rest, or I need to do something different for a day or two. But it's been just the learning aspect of that. And then knowing, and we already talked about that, my work helped create that. It's not just by chance that they're here, or I'm taking advantage of a good natural situation. And if anyone wants to talk to me about woodsmanship, I have, like, if we've had the farm for 13 years, these are the first food plots we've ever tried to put in for anything. So I will put my woodsmanship and being able to go out and find where they're at in the woods and not need to bring them to me. But if we have the ability to do so, and not only can we maybe help improve the hunting experience, but just give them a better year-round experience on the property, I'm all for it. So that work, my arms are scorched right now. They're starting to peel. I've got dead skin falling off all over the place. I love to tell strangers that I got the Rona just to see what they say when they see me. But yeah, I got scorched on the tractor the other weekend, but it's absolutely worth it. If the deer are using it, even if I only get one picture of a deer in the food plot, if we've got other wildlife and can just overall make the property better, that's really what it's all about. And I think that's, for me, when we say, you know, it's always season, that's exactly what I think of, is there's always something to do to position myself for that next opportunity that's going to pop up.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of, there's always a season. We both kind of mentioned the hog situation. We might as well talk a little bit about that. Was really lucky. You had mentioned that we're on the verge of those super hot and humid days here in Missouri. Yesterday was not one of those super humid and hot days. It was pretty warm, but the humidity was down. And Sandy and I went and two different properties in which I hunt hogs on. We've got two feeders on each place, and we really pushed ourselves to get all of those places ready to start hunting. While the humidity just wasn't absolutely horrible. And I think we threw around 1,000 pounds of corn two or three times over by the time we went and picked it up and loaded it, and then loaded it on the four-wheeler, and then loaded it into feeders. And long day, but we're pretty well set. Even though one of the properties, in fact, the property that you've been to with me a few times, that's adjacent to where MDC does their helicopter flyover kills, but that place obviously still is loaded with hogs. I don't think their flyovers are being very effective at all, but that's a whole nother subject. But lots of hog sign on both properties, and that whole effort yesterday is kind of a stark contrast to the effort that you and I have been talking about with the deer. All that work I put in yesterday is to make it easier to kill shit. And that's just point blank what it is. But that is, in a roundabout way, another way of taking care of those properties, because as most everyone that understands wildlife knows, wild hogs are not something to be desired. And so every one of those I can kill is going to help those property owners. And that goes all the way from helping their deer herds, their turkeys, but also even helping them maintain their pastures for their cattle. I mean, their pastures are getting ruined. So I'm looking forward to killing some hogs here in Missouri. And I don't think it's going to take very long for those feeders to start getting hit. So yeah, I'll be calling you here pretty soon if you want to make a trip and run a camera and maybe kill one yourself if they're coming in good.
I will absolutely be ready. Have you read anything or heard anything? I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the MDC proposals for, like, thermal imaging and some of those things that they're thinking about opening up for hog hunting after they've pretty much said don't hunt anywhere on public land ever anywhere. Have you seen anything about that? Or what do you think about some of those proposed changes that they're talking about?
Well, just in general, I really think that MDC is missing the mark a little bit on their stance of telling us, the citizens of Missouri, not to be the ones responsible for killing hogs. Let them be responsible for taking care of the problem. And what I mean by that is, you know, MDC wants to trap hogs and they want to do helicopter flyover kills of hogs, and they don't want hunters getting in the way and messing those efforts up. And so while I do understand that if they're if they have an ongoing trapping effort on a given piece of public property, they don't need other hunters in there disturbing those efforts. But I don't understand how MDC keeps telling the general public that if you hunt hogs, when you shoot one out of a group or a sounder, as they're called, you're scattering out that group and it's going to be harder to kill that sounder in the future because it's just running them all over the place. I've encountered private landowners that say they won't let me hunt. I'll just point blank say I've asked to hunt and they say no because MDC says we shouldn't. It makes it harder to control the numbers. And I don't buy into that at all. Let's face it, no state, no county, no locality, no agency has figured out how to truly eradicate hogs or even keep them under control. So I don't buy into MDC thinking that they're going to have it figured out when no one else could figure it out. So to circle back around, I say, why not just open up some other methods to let people like you or I or a landowner get rid of hogs in the best way possible? Because I don't claim to sit here and pretend like me going in with my bow and arrow and shooting one or two hogs every other trip is really going to put a dent in a population on a piece of property. But I do maintain in the summers in which I've put a big effort in and taken, say, 15 hogs off of a given 300-acre property, that has made a difference. So I think if MDC would come around and kind of tie in their efforts with the efforts of everyday Joe Blow hunter like you or I, that certainly it's not going to be a worse situation, but stands to be a better situation. So that's my take on it all, long-winded as it might be.
Yeah, and I think as I was reading even the stuff about like the thermal imaging and the night vision type stuff, as primarily bow hunters, I mean, that's not a huge advantage for us or a plus, because it's really difficult. I don't know of any sort of thermal or night imaging stuff that could even be used with a bow right now. So for those guys that are going out with firearms, yeah, I think it's great. I mean, anything that you can do to help increase that, the people who are worried about poaching, I mean, I think those folks are going to poach if they're going to poach. I don't think there's going to be too many people who are going to go out and buy, you know, an $800,000 night vision or thermal imaging, either scope or accessory, to try to poach something. They'll find their way to do it. It's not usually, well, I shouldn't say it's not usually wealthy people. I have no idea who poaches. I would hope it's people who are more either in need or are just assholes doing it for the thrill. They've been doing it with spotlights, so I don't see the danger in opening up that thermal and the night vision stuff for those people who do want to hunt on their own properties and try to control the hogs, or if nothing else, push them back towards maybe some of those traps that are set out for the sounders on the public ground. Maybe it'll help there. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But I know, like with your setup, it's usually some sort of a low glow, like a green light or something, trying to get them into that 30-foot circle maybe of the feeder somewhere tied into the blind. So I don't think it'll offer too many advantages, but it was interesting to see that they're willing to consider alternative options to try to help. Because I mean, the problem, said I was shocked. I've heard for years and years about the problems in Texas and what they really do, but until you see the damage that even a mid-sized sounder of wild hogs can do, it's really hard to comprehend how necessary it is for especially these landowners to want to at least eradicate them from their property. And I know that sometimes that might just be pushing the problem somewhere else, but I think that's kind of life in general. I think it pretty much sums up a lot of things in life is pushing the problem somewhere else so that you're kind of taking care of it. If we can keep that population down on those properties and get some decent meat out of it and, you know, have some enjoyable evenings where we wouldn't be doing shit else for the night, why not get out and go do that? So I am looking forward to it. You start getting pictures, let me know. I'll absolutely be ready to head your way with camera and bow in hand.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to killing some. And like I said, I don't pretend like I'm doing anyone a great service by, you know, the park's hog population control, but it can't hurt. And I will say that the approach that I take with hogs has proven that you can absolutely kill one or two out of a group, but that group stay on the property and even come back to that same feeder to be killed again, because time and time again, I've doubled at a feeder with the same group. Shoot one, they come back before I even get out of the blind, shoot another one, and over and over and over again, those groups continue to come back to the feeder regularly, you know, either the next day or the day after. Now, those sounders are always on the move. Even if I don't hunt them, they might be at a feeder for a week or 2 weeks max, and then they disappear, and then there's a lull until another group comes through that property. That's just the way it's proven over the last 4 years to work. But certainly several can be killed before that group is just totally, you know, blown apart and as MDC says, made unhuntable or untrappable. I just don't buy into that. But regardless, I'm going to be shooting some hogs. I'm going to have some fun. I don't want them here. I'm glad they're not on my property. They are absolutely destructive, like you said. Until you see it in person and you try to drive a four-wheeler across a field that's been tore up by them, it's really hard to imagine the destruction that they do, but it is something serious. And I hope that if nothing else, our hog population does not get worse here in Missouri than it is now.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And like you said, it's fun. I think bow hunting too has a lot to do with what you were talking about, being able to get multiples off. I think those guys that are out using firearms, more challenge, not a lot of noise to a bow. So if something happens, I mean, pigs get sketched out all the time and take off running. How many times have we sat there and they either caught a whiff of us or, you know, just didn't like something and bolted and then come back? So I think archery equipment definitely helps with the ability to get multiple pigs from a sounder before they head off or before you run out of corn. Because Lord knows, as soon as you run out of corn in those feeders, they've got no need to want to be right there when you want them to be there. So it's not like they're cruising through checking to see. They definitely know when it's there or when it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. And something else to that, I treat these properties very carefully. I don't go in and try to do spot and stalk hog hunting, even though that's by far my favorite way to hunt them. I'm really being really careful to only hunt them at the feeders when the wind is exactly right. Because what I have found is, if I only have 300 acres to hunt and it's surrounded by thousands of acres of land that is exactly like the 300 I'm on, they run into me trying to go after them a couple times, and that's about all they're going to take. They're just going to move a few hundred, you know, acres away and set up shop and just avoid where they've been disturbed that much. So I'm really being really careful, almost treating them like I would a big buck, basically, you know, so that everything has to be perfect before I go in. And then I go in, get the hunt done, don't bother them any more than I have to. You know, when you've been with me, like, get in, trail the hog, grab the hog, get out of there. and then, you know, a few days later, do it all over again. But I don't know what the whole debate with MDC and what's right and what's wrong. I honestly, like, I don't have the answers, but I do know I'm going to do my thing while I got permission on that private ground and there's hogs around.
Yeah, and you're not out there intentionally trying to mess them up either. It's not like you're going around with pots and pans in the woods, banging it, trying to scare the hogs. I mean, you're doing your thing. I think you absolutely nailed it with the correlation to hunting a big deer. I think you might even be able to get away with a little bit more with a big deer, because usually, at least for the two of us, we're hunting in tree stands. You can kind of get up to a certain level and you've got that advantage. Whereas hogs, at least the way that we've been hunting them, you're on the ground in a blind. I mean, right there, we're what, 10, 15 yards max, maybe from the center of the feeder and getting them right in. So I don't know if we've ever not hunted at all. I feel like there's probably been times that we've driven, and for me, it's almost an hour to get to your place and then another hour to get to your properties that you've got. And I feel like there's been a couple times where we've gone out and put out corn and realized, man, the wind is not right, and turn around and headed home.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's not been uncommon for me. And it does kind of suck to get that kind of drive time investment only to figure out that either the forecast was wrong or it switched or, you know, just whatever it might be. But if the wind's not perfect, I mean, there's no reason to sit there and educate hogs. And so that's what happens. It's happened to you a couple times where we sat for a little while, the wind shifts, so we bail and we just get a little bit of quote unquote work done while we're down there, meaning check on cameras and check the feeders and make sure they're good and then head back home. But, you know, in the last 4 years, I think I've killed 30 something hogs in Missouri with a bow. So, and, you know, a handful of others that got killed with people that's been with me. So,
and all fair chase. It's not like you're hunting anywhere that has any sort of fence other than three strand barbed wire or something for cattle.
Yeah, right.
It's not
right.
Like you're, you know, hunting somebody that's been bringing the hogs in and releasing them in their, you know, 50 acres or even 500 acres. So that's a lot when you consider these pigs could go anywhere. And about the only thing that you have done is put out some corn in hopes that maybe the ones that are around will come in close enough that you can pick a few out of the sounder before they wise up and move on.
Yeah, yeah. It's good fun, but like I said, hopefully populations don't continue to expand here in Missouri. I know a lot of states kind of in line with us, like Kentucky, Southern Illinois, they're all starting to get some hogs and talking about hogs, so we're not alone in that. But man, you talk to people like that ranch that I turkey hunt in Texas, I mean, it's 7,000 acres and they kill about 1,000 hogs off that 7,000 acres every year. And it doesn't even make a difference. Like, they don't see any less hogs. They don't have less hog problems. It's just like, they're just barely keeping up. And that's been the case anywhere that I've hunted them, and in Florida also. That's why I say just no one has the solution. It's just a matter of, you know, trying to black out as many of them as you can so that there's less there than the day than when you started that day.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. They're just so resilient that once they have a foothold, I don't know, they're almost like rabbits, man. I don't know how you could get ahead of them without doing something where even us as sportsmen would be like, unless there's a certain amount of damage, that's probably not cool to just go in and blow up a ton of hogs here. I hope they don't move up. It's been awesome to be able to go out a few times and go hunt them with you and see it. But certainly would hate to see it continue to spread, especially in those cases where it's maybe somebody who's thinking, oh, this might be now maybe more than ever. So I hate to even speak it, but those folks who are doing it as a source of income and trying to continue to push it, that's a hard way to really, I guess, make a living. I don't know. I would hate to be that person who is doing something that's so destructive for the greater society just for my own kind of limited income. I don't know how many people are out there actually making a bunch of money off of doing guided hog hunts or making a living solely off of that. But speaking of just hunting hogs, we've talked about wind quite a bit, how important that is. What are some of your best evening, because we're going out usually at dark and waiting and intending to probably get most of our shot opportunities after dark. What are some of your best archery hog hunting tips, maybe even just two or three for this week's episode that you could share with people who are trying to think, how the hell do I get these hogs off of my property?
Oh boy. So if in just in terms of bow hunting for hogs, I think the absolute number one tip is shot placement with an arrow, and the fact that a hog's vitals are much more forward as compared to a deer's. And so for me, that means that the vertical line of my pins is always straight up, even with their front legs. So if they're broadside, I'm just going straight up the front leg. And right,
are you
about
splitting the front leg, or are you going up the front side of it?
If they're quartering away, then I'm splitting the front legs. If they're quartering to, I'm probably not shooting at all. So I really want broadside or quartering away on a hog where, I won't say a quartering two shot won't kill a hog. We don't need to get into all that. I'm just saying a hog's always on the move, so you might as well wait for the best angle, and the best angle's broadside or quartering away. But you don't want to put the pin behind the shoulder of a hog because you're probably going to be in the guts. And if you gut shoot a hog, you're not going to find him hardly ever. So that's my number one tip, is just remember the heart and lungs are much more forward as compared to a deer's vitals.
It's a good tip because, yeah, you would think a lot of times, oh, I know right here, just come up the back leg, look for that crease, but you may not even get liver. And even if you do on a hog, I don't know how many I've been with you that you've shot, but they don't leak a whole lot. I mean, unless there are certain times where there's quite a bit of blood, but for the most part, between the fat, the hide, the hair, if you have to track one, I mean, at least in the areas that you've taken me, it's not a lot of fun with a flashlight or a headlamp and 90 plus degree temperatures in the dark to try to find little drops of blood here and there and try. You're probably more likely to find the hog based on smell after a while than you are to actually come up on the blood trail if you get too far back or get in those guts, because they can go a long damn way.
Yeah, they definitely can. I mean, if you double lung one or shoot one in the heart, he's not going to go that far. And as long as you're using a pretty good broadhead, it's going to leave a decent amount of blood. But man, you get back in the liver and guts, it's hard going almost always.
And
I think you said, like, it's just, you know, for us that's killed a lot of deer, whether it be bow or gun, you know, it's just our nature to put that pin behind the crease. That's just in your head, behind the shoulder. And that's a losing philosophy for hogs. It's a total readjustment of aim point for hogs, really.
So are you doing anything there? Because I know there's the debate, mechanicals versus fixed blade. And from what I've seen, not even having shot at a hog myself yet, I can't imagine that I would feel comfortable taking a big, like a 2-inch type cut, 2 or 3 blade mechanical head on a hog, even when we're talking 10, 15 yards away, to be able to get that kind of penetration. But are you doing anything different from an arrow setup? Are you making sure you've got a heavier front of center, or are you using, because you're a fixed blade shooter already, are you just using your whitetail setup when you're hog hunting?
Yeah, I do use my whitetail setup. But keep in mind that my whitetail setup is pretty much a middle of the road. It's not a super heavy arrow. It's not a super light. I happen to be shooting fixed blades exclusively the last couple years. Now, a few years ago when I was playing around with those great big expandables on deer, I still was sticking with a good fixed blade head for hogs. And the biggest reason for that is this. A sow or a small boar is a whole different story than what a big boar is. But even a small boar or sow, you still have really coarse hair, and in the warm months, like from now on through the summer, usually their hair, their skin is coated in mud. So you're always got to get through this coating of mud and coarse hair and thick skin and fat before you get to the goodies. And I just don't think that an expandable with their thinner blades that don't hold an edge and may not hold up through all of that stuff before they get to the vitals is the way to go. And then there's the whole thing of penetration, impediment, and kinetic energy, blah, blah, blah. And I have a great understanding of it. I don't really get into talking about it much or debating it. As you know, it just isn't something that needs to be overthought beyond to shoot a good combination with a sharp broadhead and, in my opinion, a fixed head. Like, I'll go ahead and plug on the ones that I shoot from Magnus. Their heads are fantastic on hogs, and the blood trails that I get on hogs are a pretty good test for those heads. And in fact, when I first switched to Magnus, that's the first thing I shot was some hogs with them. And if they could do a number on hogs, I know that a deer is no match for them. So I don't change anything. But here's another thing everyone should keep in mind. You've already touched on it a couple times. I have my setups situated so I'm shooting a hog like 10 yards and sometimes less. And so I'm not trying to stretch my shots out to 30 or 40 yards and all of that distance and loss of energy that goes with it. Not that that's an issue with most animals. It's just I have a lot more confidence in putting an arrow right through a pig's shoulder at 5, 6, 7, 8 yards than I would at 30 yards. That's all.
Well, and even a relaxed pig moves more than probably any other animal that you might run into out in the woods. I mean, you already said they're always moving somewhere, doing something. So the closer you are, the less difference you've got to make up in the amount of movement by the time the arrow gets there. And then you hit the fat, the mud, the hair, the really super coarse hair. And if you don't have a razor sharp broadhead already, it's going to get caught up in all that, and you're not even to the bone yet. And I would say pound for pound, for what I have seen, I would put the shoulder blade of a 150-pound boar up against the shoulder blade of 150 or 200-pound buck, and I would much rather shoot through the shoulder blade of that buck and feel confident that I'm going to be able to blow through that with I don't know what you're shooting. I've dropped down to 60 pounds now for both hunting and target setups. But at 60 pounds, even at 10 yards, I mean, you've had some shots where it didn't go through, and you've had some shots where you got a threefer. You get them lined up right, and you got just the right holding spot. I mean, you can get through there. But it's one of those deals I think I would tell somebody, if you have a broadhead that you have shot at pretty much anything in the past, you need to run that thing over a blade sharpener before you go out hog hunting, even if it just hit the dirt. I really feel like with hogs, it seems that critically important that your broadheads are absolutely as sharp as they can be. That fat has so much drag to it. I would say also, I think the smaller diameter arrows are probably going to be, I would much rather do that than some of the fatter shafts that are out there when it comes to hogs. Yeah, you can get some heavier weights, but you can get inserts if you really want to build that weight up. I think not very many people think about all those things that you just mentioned. They're just thinking hide, bone, vital area, not thick layers of fat, a much thicker shoulder bone with a shield on it than they've seen on most other animals, just everything. So even at that 10 yards, that's a lot of energy to try to punch through there if you don't have something that's going to slide as easily through that hog as it possibly can.
Yeah, and you mentioned the shield, and that's what I was kind of getting at when I said a big boar is a whole different can of worms, because they are. When a boar gets to be 125 to 150 pounds and up, they're that big because they're older. As they get older, they develop a shield around their chest, and that shield is specifically protection of their vitals from fighting with other boars. And I've killed plenty of big boars, and I always like to cut open their shield and just kind of get an idea of how thick it is. And what that shield really is, it's just like, I guess it's cartilage. I don't know if technically it's cartilage, but it's the super dense, hard material that It is not easy to get through with an arrow or a bullet, and can be as thick. I've killed boars with it as thick as an inch on each side of their body. So think of that. And that's separate from the hide and the fat and the muscle. So that's this extra layer of protection. And that the shield on a big boar is the absolute number one reason why I don't recommend an expandable for a boar. And in fact, being a little conservative on your fixed blade selection, like I might shoot black hornets at deer from Magnus all the time, but their cutting angle is pretty, I don't want to call it extreme, but it's pretty aggressive cutting angle. But some of their other heads, like stingers, have a much less of a cutting angle, and those are built for better penetration. And there's an awful lot of hogs killed with their stingers, I can tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been a whole lot of all sorts of animals they killed with that stinger. It's been a hell of a broadhead for them over the years. Didn't think we were going to get into talking about hogs per se today, but I'm glad that we did. The more we talk about it, the more I'm excited to get back out there. I'm sure the first evening that we have where there's no wind and it's, 90 something degrees in the dark and we're sweating our butts off inside of a blind, I'd be like, what did I say that I was excited to get out and go do?
Yeah, I know. It gets to be pretty hot in those blinds, but it's still fun. And like you said, we didn't even plan what we were going to talk about today, but this is where we landed, and I guess there'll be more hog talk to come soon for sure.
I'm hoping, hopefully those cameras will start to pick up some action for you at the feeders and let you know when they're coming in and get out and get on a few and get some good video for you and get things taken care of. I know I'm looking forward to a little bit more wild hog. The one that I smoked the ham on last year was pretty damn good. So I'm definitely looking forward to that aspect of it as well. What else has been going on? What do you think we need to cover? We got everything. Like I said, we didn't talk about what do we need to talk about this week? What do you got on your mind? It's just, let's have a conversation this week. Is there anything that we haven't gotten to that you wanted to make sure that we talked about?
That has really covered the extent of my outdoors activities for the last couple weeks anyways. Just like we started off, we could circle right back around. I'm kind of sad to see turkey season go, but happy to be able to be chasing hogs again, and also looking forward to more and more deer hunting discussion and activities and all of that anticipation that leads up to deer season. So that's really about what I have for this week.
Yeah, and we'll have more and more deer content too. I know we've already talked with Justin from Spy Point. He also, for those of you who don't know Justin, he had a pretty nasty fall out of a tree stand a couple of years ago and has really gotten active in tree stand safety. So we want to have him on to talk about his experience, share his story, what the organization that he's involved with is doing, and just some tips and ideas to keep everyone from having to go through what he went through. Still have plans on having an optics focused episode as well. So
yes, that's right. I'll interrupt you real quick and just say I did get an email confirmation today from one of the tech guys at Vortex, and they're happy to join us. So I'll be working on getting that scheduled. In fact, I think that's probably going to be doable for our next episode after this one.
Awesome. Yeah, that'll be great. So questions that you all have, continue to send those in. We've got some great questions when we posted about that the other week. So make sure that if there's anything that you're wondering about optics in general or specifically about Vortex, be sure that you all send us those questions. You can message them to us on social media at Hotshot Archery, pretty much all the places. Way easier for us to track them, see them, make sure that we get them asked when we do have that conversation. If you email them, you can email them to podcast@hotshotmanufacturing.com, and we'll make sure that we get those addressed, or as many of those as we possibly can get addressed. I'm really excited for that particular conversation. And then it's just, again, whatever we got going on during the summers, we're going to share with you if it's hunting related. I spent my past week, actually not my whole weekend, but I spent all day yesterday doing my first ever all grain beer brewing. So that was pretty crazy. Got lots of things going on, but that being the case, trying to spend time with the family and vacations and everything getting canceled, probably be a couple weeks between now and our next episode. And just make sure that we have that time to spend with our families and make sure that you are spending time with your families. I think that's probably, if I were to have a parting shot, that would be my thing is, man, I keep hearing all these stories. This isn't related to anything that we've discussed here today, but I have heard from so many friends or acquaintances of people I know whose kids are really struggling, who have either been hospitalized or fighting depression. So I know we're all into the outdoors, but make sure that you are taking that time to talk with your kids, talk with your family in general, your wife, your husband, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your whomever you've got. Make sure they're doing all right. Spend that time with them. We're all going to have time to get out into the woods. This has been a really weird situation, and I would hate to think that any of our listeners might have a young child. And I mean, I'm talking, I have kids as young as 7 or 8 to kids that are 14, 15 years old that have been really challenged. So, you know, ask your kids what's on their mind, spend that time with them. I also just got a hell of a deal on a kayak over the weekend. So I've got a fishing kayak, going to start doing that with Jackson over the summer and getting some time to just make sure that even though it's crazy for him and he can't really be around all his friends and his school got totally effed up and had this really weird experience like so many other people, I'm glad that I remind myself often to pause and just ask him how he's doing and what he thinks about all this and what's on his mind and try not to, you know, just be on his ass about every single thing and realizing that, you know, he's got the brain of an almost 12-year-old. He's not going to process things. So if you're noticing anything with your kids or even if you're not, man, just ask your kids. I would hate to hear about anything bad happening to somebody because they're struggling to deal with just everything that life's throwing at them, regardless of their age right now. So I think that's pretty much my parting shot for the show this week.
Yeah, and that's a good one. And you're right, that has nothing to do with anything we've talked about, but it doesn't mean it doesn't have any relevance. And I'm going to a high school graduation tomorrow in which we pull our car into a parking lot and we don't get out of the car. It's a weird time. And if it's weird for us as adults, imagine what it's like for some of these kids, whether it's a kid that's Jack's age, or whether it's someone graduating high school or even in college. It's a weird world out there. My parting shot, it kind of piggybacks on that, and it's one that I've kind of harped on all through this pandemic, and that I really hope our listeners are finding ways to still be able to do whatever it is that drives them in the outdoors. And it doesn't matter if that's hiking or fishing or hunting. Everyone's world's changed, but I hope everyone still finds ways to at least get little bits and pieces of what it is that drives them.
Yeah, great, great parting shots. Hopefully somebody listened to this whole craziness of an episode to get to the real gems right there at the end. Just want to end kind of how we always do. I appreciate everybody who listens. I appreciate the comments. There's sometimes like this podcast is being released tomorrow morning, so I'll be sitting here this evening working on the editing. We've done a great job actually between the file sharing services that are out there and doing things remotely. So I'll be getting the files from you here in a little bit, and it makes it worth those times when we're trying to struggle with when can we both get together and when can we make a recording happen and then get it all put together. So I appreciate all the positive feedback, everybody who's listening and letting us know what you like. And even some of you who are very prone to let us know what you don't like about the show. We hear that too. We probably don't care as much if it's something that isn't something that we can change. If it's just you hate who we are, well, congratulations. You're going to have a terrible go with this podcast, because that's just, we are the people of the podcast. So thank you all so much for listening, for taking, you know, a half hour, an hour out of your lives every week or every other week to hear what we've got going on or what we think about particular topics. It really helps just continue to drive and motivate us to get together and make sure that these episodes are happening. So I appreciate all of our listeners, those who are sharing feedback with us, those who are just the silent listeners. You're all awesome. So I will wrap up this week with thank you all so much for your support. If you weren't listening, it wouldn't make any of this worth doing. So really appreciate it. And just continue to let us know what you dig, what you don't dig. If there's a particular topic or a particular person you think that we should try to reach out to and have a conversation with, share that with us as well. We would love to talk to more people and better our own understandings of the activities that we pursue, whether it's hunting or archery, or if it's something totally unrelated, like all grain beer brewing or ice fishing or something like that. Definitely let us know who we should be talking to. So thank you all so much. Robin, before we cut this thing off here this week, any last words of wisdom?
That's all I got, buddy. I think we've wrapped this one up and tied it up.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you giving me a call tonight, and I am looking forward to getting this all put together and then talking again for our next episode here in a couple weeks. So thank you all so much, and we'll talk again soon.